We're on Chof Gimel Amud Beis. We're going to be beginning the third parak. So the subject, at least of the beginning of the parak, is going to be, we've said that Malachas Oichel Nefesh are mutter on Yom Tov, but we said there are rules within that of what kind of Malachas of Oichel Nefesh are mutter. So in particular, we talked about, and here's one of the major places where Rashi and Tosfos argue about what the idea is, what's the general rule, what malachas are mutter and aser. So Rashi explains here and in other places that the criteria is, could you have done it the day before or not? If you could have done it the day before, then the Chachamim are not going to allow you to do it on Yom Tov. On the other hand, Tosfos learns it's not really that. It's more that there's certain kinds of malachas that even on a daraisa level, you're not allowed to do on Yom Tov, whether you could have done them the day before or not. Tosfos earlier in the Masechta brings in that connection from the Yerushalmi that, for example, talking about it in terms, let's say, of making bread, only malachas from Lisha, from kneading and onward, are mutter, but not the previous ones. Good morning, Avraham Moshe. So the Mishnah starts off for beginning of Parak Gimel, Chof Gimel Amud Beis. Ein sadin dogir min a bivrim b'yom tov. On Yom Tov, you're not allowed to catch fish from a bivrim. So a bivrim, Rashi translates it with a French word, which is related to the word bivrim. It actually, the word comes from a Latin word, viver, which means like a place for living creatures. So a bivrim, so we're going to have different kinds. We're going to be talking about bivrim of fish, of animals, of birds, and whatever. Basically, they are enclosures where you keep live animals or birds or fish. In the case of fish, of course, then we're talking about a pond where you keep them, and eventually you catch them from there and you eat them. So they're not completely locked up in a cage. You do have to catch them from there, but on the other hand, they're not out in the wild. So the Mishnah is telling us, if you have a bivrim, which therefore is a pond of water, where you have fish, you're not allowed to catch fish from that pond on Yom Tov. So Rashi explains the reason is because why do you have to do that on Yom Tov? Do it on Erev Yom Tov. You're worried the fish is going to spoil. Fine. You enclose them in a smaller part of the pond on Erev Yom Tov. You put them inside a trap or something. Erev Yom Tov. You make sure that it's the kind of trap, let's say, like a cage or something, where they can't get out, but on the other hand, they can still freely find food and whatever. And then the next day you'll be able to take out the trap, and the fish is still alive and still fresh. So do that rather than catching it on Yom Tov itself. So therefore, Rashi is saying, in effect, that the Chachamim asked it for that reason. Whereas again, Tosfos says that it's not really, there's really no difference with Malachas Oichel Nefesh, whether you could have done it before Yom Tov or not, according to Tosfos's Shita, that would apply, that distinction would only apply to Machshirim, to things that you're doing as preparations for Malachas Oichel Nefesh. For example, later on in the Perek, we're going to talk about, let's say, for example, making or fixing a spit on Yom Tov in order to roast meat. The roasting itself is Malachas Eichel Nefesh. The making or fixing of the spit is a machshirin to that. So only when it comes to machshirin, Tosfos says, is there a difference between could you have done it the day before or not? By Eichel Nefesh itself, Tosfos learns that not. And therefore, they say that no, the correct explanation is, like they brought near the beginning of the Masechta, that the reason is there are certain malachas that are intrinsically also on Yom Tov, even on there's a malacha of koitzer. You're not allowed to harvest, and to catch the fish, to take it out of where it naturally grows, is similar to harvesting. So either way, the point is you're not allowed to do it on Yom Tov. And the Mishnah continues, ve'ein noisin lefnei mezonos. Also, while the fish are in the water, you're not allowed to put food for them. Now, again, here you have Rashi and Tosfos disagree why. Rashi says, because we learned in the previous perek that Rabbi Akiva holds you're allowed, even when we say you're allowed to do malachas oichel nefesh, we said Rabbi Akiva holds that includes even nefesh of animals. So according to him, you're allowed to do malacha or machshirin of malacha to give food to animals. However, over here it's different. Rashi says because the fish can forage for themselves. They find grasses or other things to eat in the water. They even eat each other when it comes to that. So therefore, you don't have to provide them with food. Tosafist disagrees with that, and explains that no, the reason why you're not allowed to give them food is because that's connected with the fact that you're not allowed to trap them. Since you're not allowed to trap them on Yom Tov, now the Chachamim are concerned that if you give them food, then if you give them food, you might at the same time trap them as well, and therefore you can't do that. Okay, continues the Mishnah. Abel tzadin chayev oif min abivrim. But on the other hand, if you have a bivrim of wild animals or birds, and again, for them, a bivrim would be a large enclosed area with walls or fences around it. So then you are allowed to trap wild animals or birds from a bivrim. And we're going to see in the Gemara why that is. Venosna, the name Mizonis, and you're allowed to put food in front of them. So Rashi explains, even though you have this bivrim, you have this large enclosed area, in principle, grass and whatever grows in it. So what's the problem? But first of all, during the winter, they can't get at the grass. And even during the summer, you have areas where people step, where grass doesn't grow, and therefore there may not be enough grass for them, and therefore you're allowed to provide it. Reb Shimon Gamliel, I'm a local bivrim shavim. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, not all bivrim are the same. And we're going to see in the Gemara, is Reb Shimon Gamliel disagreeing with the Tanna Kamma, or is he just clarifying what the Tanna Kamma is saying? So he says, Zehaklal, the general rule is, kol ha-mechoser tzeda oser, whenever it's still lacking being trapped, then it's also, in other words, as the Gemara is going to say, if you still have to, if the bivrim is large enough that you still have to go, the animal is in there, it can't get out freely into the wild, but on the other hand, you still have to go and trap it, you still have to go catch it within that area, then it's going to be also. V'she'enim ha-chosu tzeda mutter, if it's not lacking that, if it's already effectively already trapped in a small area, then it's mutter. And we'll see about the details of that in the Gemara. So the Gemara starts off, Uraminu. I have a contradiction. So again, our Mishnah is saying that you're not allowed to catch fish from a bivrim, but you are allowed to catch wild animals or birds from a bivrim. And in both cases, also with the fish, you're not allowed to feed them, and with the wild animals or the birds, you are allowed to feed them. So the Gemara says, Uraminu. I have a contradiction. A braisa says, bivrim shal chaya b'shal oifus, ain't sudden mehen miyamtiv. So a bivrim of wild animals or birds, you're not allowed to catch animals from it on yamtiv. The ain noistan lefnei mezonis, you're not allowed to put food in front of them. So kasha chaya chaya, kasha oifus a oifus. So you have a contradiction as far as the chaya, where our Mishnah says you're allowed to catch them and give them food, and the braisa says not. And the same thing, you have a contradiction as far as the birds. Same problem. So the Gemara says, Bishlim achaya achaya like kasha. Now, when it comes to wild animals, we can answer, let's say, for example, deer, we can answer there's no real contradiction because Harab Yehuda Harabanan. We can say that the Mishnah is going according to the Chachamim, and the Braisa is going according to the Yehuda. Namely, Tznan, we learn in a Mishnah in Shabbos, talking about the malacha of tzeda, you have one of the 39 malachas as trapping an animal. So the Mishnah says there, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, hatzod tzipur lemigdol. If a person hunts down a bird and gets it into a closet, or if he runs after a deer and gets it into the house, chayev, then he's chayev for the malacha of tzeda. Because now once he got the bird in the closet or the deer into the house, now it's already you've finished doing the tzeder. You've gotten it into a narrow enough area where now you're gonna easily be able to get it from there. Therefore you've done the malacha of tzad. So now applying that to our Mishnah, labai sudim chayiv aval bivrim loy. Now the implication is that Rabbi Yehuda would say, if you only ran after the deer and got it into the bivrim, you haven't yet done the malacha daraisa of tzeda. It might still well be also the rabbanan, but the point is that you still haven't done on a daraisa level of malacha of tzeda. Well, applying that to our Mishnah, then if the deer was in the bivrim before Yom Tov, then now you're not allowed to get it from there because now you need a fresh action of tzeda in order to get it. So the braisa that says that you're not allowed to catch the wild animal from a bivrim would be according to Rabbi Yehuda. And the Mishnah there continues, v'chamim say tzipor the migdol. Fine, as far as a bird, we agree that once you get it into that, once you get it into a closet, then that's tzedah. In other words, the implication is, let's say, for example, if the bird was just in a house, then even if you locked up the front door, that wouldn't be enough to be considered tzedah of the bird, because the bird can easily fly out the windows. So tzipor l'migdol, only if the bird is into a closet are you going to be chayev, or tzvi l'gina l'chotzer l'bivrim. But with a deer, the Chachamim say, it doesn't have to be all the way as far as you get it into the house. Even if you get it into a garden, or a chotzer, or a bivrim, then that's already considered trapped, and now you've done the malacha of tzedah. So therefore, so our Mishnah that says now you can take the wild animal from the bivrim would be according to the Chachamim, that once it's in the bivrim, it's already considered trapped. So fine. So that part we can reconcile the Mishnah and the Gemara, with the Mishnah and the Braisa. Ela ofis a ofis kasha. But what about birds? Everybody agrees that a bird is trapped only when you get it into a closet, not even you get it into a house, let alone a bivrim, which is even larger than a house. So how is it the Mishnah is saying that you're allowed to take birds from the bivrim and the Braisa says you're not? V'chitema ha nami l'kasha ha b'biver v'kora ha b'biver she'ena makora. So you're going to answer, there's still no contradiction, because you could be distinguishing between a biver that has a roof versus one that doesn't. So if the biver doesn't have a roof, the bird can easily fly out the top of it. Therefore it would be considered mechoser tzeda. Therefore, to take the bird from there would be to go and catch it with a net or something would be a new act of tzeda. And we're saying you couldn't do it. Whereas if it has a roof, then effectively it's caught in there. That doesn't work though. The whole bias to biver makura dummy, because consider the case of a house. A house is no different than a biver makura. It's smaller even. And we still see, even though a house has a roof, still Rabbi Yehuda is, both Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim are saying that once the bird is in the house, you haven't yet accomplished the malacha of tzedah. So what is it? So what's the scenario where the Mishnah could be saying that you could trap the birds from the bivrim and the Braisa says that not? The answer is Amar Rav Bar Rav Huna Hocha B'Tzipor Dror Askinan. Here in the Braisa, we're talking about a Tzipor Dror. Now, the one possibility is a Dror might mean a specific species of bird, like a sparrow or something like that. But some of the Rishonim say that. Others say it doesn't necessarily mean a specific species. It just means generally little birds that have this characteristic that we're going to say She'enem Kabelas Morus. It never accepts human domination. So it's super drur. Therefore, in other words, even when it's in the house, it still knows how to evade you. You try to get it in one place and it's able to quickly flit into another part of the house. And in fact, the Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, Loma Nikra Shma Tzipor Dror, why is this bird called Tzipor Dror? Shadara, the word Dror is related to the word Dara. It lives, Babayas Kabasada, it lives in the house, just like in the field. In other words, unlike other birds who once they're inside a house and they realize in their little bird brains that they're trapped, then they continue, then that's it, they give up. And you can easily take them. A Tzipor Dror is not like that. It's still going to continue to try to evade you and to try to fly quickly to the other corner or whatever. So the Mishnah that says that once birds are in a bivrim, then you're allowed to take them from there on Yom Tov is talking about other kinds of birds. And the Braisa that says that then, and the Braisa that says that you're not allowed to, would be talking about a Tzipor Dror. So the Gemara says, "Hashta to osis lahachi." You know what? Now that you got to that point, now that you don't have to say you, it's preferable not to say that our Mishnah is only according to one Tana. We would always rather say that a Stam Mishnah goes according to all Tanoim. So before, the first answer was we were forced to say that the Mishnah is according to the Chachamim and the Braisa is according to the Yehuda. Now that we have the distinction between birds as far as a Tzipor Dror or not, now actually. Chaya, nami lekasha, then also there's no contradiction as far as the wild animals, and you don't need to say the Mishnah is according to the Chachamim and the Braisa is according to the Yehuda. Rather, both of them could be working according to the Chachamim, and lekasha, hob a beaver cotton, hob a beaver gadol. There's a difference whether it's a small beaver or a big one. So the Mishnah is talking about a small beaver. And the Chachamim, our Mishnah is talking about a small beaver. Also in the Mishnah in Shabbos, when we said that according to Rabbi Yehuda, that if you get the Chachamim, when they said that if you get a deer into a bivrin, then it's considered trapped, is talking about a small bivrin. And now, when the Braisa says that you can't, it's talking about a large bivrin where the animal is still able to run away from there. So now, according to that understanding, it would mean in our Mishnah, when Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, lo yikal bivrin shavim, then it would mean that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is saying, even within a bivr cut. And so now there's two possibilities of how to understand Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. You could understand Rashi says that he's arguing about, he's saying, even a small bivr, it may depend whether, it not necessarily is it a given because it's small, automatically the animal is trapped in there. It depends on the size and it depends on the shape and whatever of it. Or the other possibility is he's not arguing, he's clarifying what the Tanakhama says. But anyway, so therefore, so we could answer that way, that in fact, so the Mishnah is talking about bivra cotton, the Braisa is talking about bivra gadol, as far as wild animals, and as far as birds, you can't say that, because even a bivra cotton is larger than a house, and we still said a bird is not trapped until it's in the house. But rather, what we mean is there's a difference between a tzipra drur and other kinds of birds. A tzipra drur, even in a bivrin or even in a house, is not considered trapped unless you get it into a closet. Therefore, you wouldn't be able to take it from there on Yom Tov. And other kinds of birds, once they realize they're trapped, then that's it. They give up. So then you'd be allowed to take those on Yom Tov, which is what the Mishnah is saying. Okay, so now the question is, fine, what's the definition? How big does it have to be to be considered gadol? How much smaller does it have to be to be considered cotton? Amar Ravashi, kol heicha de rohita basra, when the person can run after the animal or the bird, umati lo b'chad shichya, and reach it with one shichya, with one bending over. So like you, so now the Rashba explains that if you have to run, now shichya ach shichya b'chad shichya, so Rashi explains, like one time he bends over or he leaps over in order to get it. So the Rashba points out that according to that, if you have to run after it, obviously that's not one bending over or one lunge. So therefore, the Rashba says, according to that understanding of it, you would have to take out the words rohi tabasra, run after it. So it would just be that Rav Ashi would be saying, kolecha the motila b'chad shichya, where you're able to reach it in one lunge. However, Rabbeinu Chananel has a different girsa, not shichya with a ches, but shihya with a hey, which means like one time. So in that case, we could have the words that you run after. It means all you have to do is run after it one time. And at the end of that run, b'chad shihya, in one action of running and catching, you'll be able to get it. Then it would be biva kuf. So again, it comes out there's two different ways, depending on the different gersois, of understanding what Rav Ashi is saying. Is it that you don't even need to run after it, you're just able to grab it right on the spot? Or is it that even you might have to run after it, but you can run after it and catch it all in one act of running and catching, you don't have to catch your breath and then try again? So anyway, then it would be considered biver cotton, b'idach, if it's any larger than that, biver gadol, then it would be a biver gadol. That's one definition, says Rav Ashi. Inami, or another definition, kol heicha de'ika ukti ukti. What if the biver has a lot of little corners in it? What if it's not exactly square or rectangular or round or what have you? What if it's irregularly shaped and you have a lot of little side corners and things, which the animal can easily hide out in those? So if it has those, biver gadol, then even if physically it only covers a small area, then it's still considered a biver gadol because the animal can easily get away from you. The idach biver cotton. If not, then it's considered a biver cotton. So it depends on the size. It also depends on the shape of it. Inami, or another definition, kol hecha the nafli tuladik soli ahadadi, where the shadow of the walls falls one on the other. In other words, it's so small, Rashi explains, that you have, so at one time of the day, the shadow of one wall reaches, so Rashi doesn't specify. Different Rishonim talk about the possibility. Do we mean that at some time of the day, the shadow of one wall reaches the other wall? Which therefore now Tosfos explains that they had the, these bivurim had a fixed size. Otherwise, how would you say? How would you know? I mean, it depends on the height of the walls. Tosfos says that the walls of bivurim were made to a certain specific height. So one possibility is it means if there's a time of day when the shadow of one wall reaches the other. The other possibility is it means if the shadow of the walls at different times of day reaches the same spot. So you have in the morning, let's say the shadow of the east wall of the biver reaches until a certain point in the middle of the biver, and then later on in the, and at the end of the day, the shadow of the west wall reaches the same spot going from its direction. So if that's the case, biver cotton, then that would be considered a biver cotton, v'idach biver gadol. If it's any larger than that, it would be a biver gadol. So so most of the Mefarshim say that really these different definitions are not necessarily arguing with each other. They're just different ways of expressing the same point when you have, when the biver is made in a way, again, that you can grab the animal all at once, then it's a biver cotton. If not, then it's a biver gadol. And again, one way of defining that is just by the total size of it. Another way is by looking not only at the size, but also at the shape of it and considering if its shape in a way that the animal can easily evade you. And a third way is just if the place is so small that, that if the place is so small then it, that the shadows reach each other, etc., then it means it's so small that if you tried to grab the animal, you'd be able to do it in one swoop. Okay. Now, then we said in the Mishnah, Rav Shimon Gamliel and Eloi Kala Bivrin Shavin Fula. Rav Shimon Gamliel said that not all Bivrim are the same. So Amr Rav Yosef, Amr Rav Yehuda, Amr Shmuel, halacha could have Shimon Gamliel. The halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel. It's not necessarily just a matter of the size of the biver. It depends on other factors as well. Amr Le Abaya halacha miklal defliki. So Abaya says to Rav Yosef, when you're saying the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel, does that imply that he and the Tanakhama are arguing? Like we said before, that even within a biver cotton, even if it's cotton according to the various distinctions that we said before, Rav Shimon Gamliel still might say it's also to take the bird from there. Or is it that, that he's clarifying? Amalei, so Rav Yosef says to him, "Amai nafkalach mina? What's the difference? Either way, I'm telling you the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel. So so it doesn't matter if he's arguing with the Tanakhama, still the halacha is like him. And if not, then it still means that the halacha is like him. Either way, what's the difference? Amalei, but Abaya answers him with an expression, Gemara gemur zmorta tehei. Would we use an expression to somebody like Rashi says, a mashal of shoitim? Would we tell a Talmud, go learn whether what you're learning is true or not true, and either way you'll sing it? No, we don't do that. We want to understand what we're saying. In other words, so we want to understand whether Rav Shimon Gamliel is in fact arguing with the Tanakhama or not. However, then Rav Yosef did not explain to him, or at least we don't have in the Gemara over here, what he explained whether in fact Rav Shimon Gamliel is arguing or not. This that we're saying, Gemara, Gemara, Zmorta, Tehei, by the way, we have nowadays, we know when people sit and learn Gemara by themselves or with Chavrusa, they often do it with a tune. And it seems that in the times of the Gemara, they also used to do that. And in fact, you have a Gemara at the end of Megillah that criticizes somebody who learns without a tune. So it seems from all Gemara and from other places that they used to do that. And therefore, Abaya can be using the expression that if you just learn Gemara without thinking of what you're saying, then you're just like singing a song. B'pnimius, by the way, there is an idea. The word zmorta also means to cut off. Like we have when we talk about azamer b'shvachin, doesn't just mean I'll sing. It means I'll cut off the klippus through the singing of the zmiris of Shabbos. So the same way over here, b'pnimius, it also means gemara gemara. When you learn gemara, zmorta tehei, it accomplishes that you're cutting off that you're cutting off klippus and other negative things in the world. But nevertheless, Abaya is saying you have to understand what you're saying rather than just doing it, rather than just singing it. Okay, so we said in the Mishnah, Zeh klal kol mechusar tzeda v'chola. Rav Shimon Gamliel had said the general rule is anything that is still lacking tzeda, you need then you're not allowed to take it on Yom Tov. So heichi damim mechusar tzeda. So what does that mean? Mechusar tzeda. So Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. It means when we say, when people say, go get a net, go get a trap, we have to trap it. Now, so Rashi explains that this amounts to the same thing as what Rav Ashi had said before. Rav Ashi had given a couple of different definitions of biver cotton versus biver gadol based based on the size, based on the shape, etc. So now Rashi says that Rabbi Yosef's definition is the, amounts to the same thing. When you say when the place is too big or when it has corners or whatever, then you're going to say when you want the animal, you know what? I can't get the animal just with one lunge. I'm going to have to run around it after it a lot. So go get a net and let me catch it that way. Tosfos, on the other hand, disagrees and says that in that case, we don't need a new definition. We already had the definition. So therefore, Tosfos explains that no, the difference is before we were talking about animals, now we're talking about birds. So birds being smaller, and even we said before that the beaver may have a roof over it, otherwise for sure the bird is not considered trapped in it. Nevertheless, we still need to know with a beaver, what's the point at which we would say that a bird is considered trapped in there? And the answer is if you don't need a net to catch it, if you're just able to catch it with your like this by grabbing it with your bare hands. But Abaya says, one second, what about geese and chickens, which they roam around your yard, and the fact is, you do need to, when you want to catch one, you do need to take a net and catch it, because they run around real fast. Vatanya, yet we learn in a brisa, hatsod abzin v'tanagolim v'yone hadesias potter. If a person traps on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, geese or chickens or yone hadesias, which are domesticated doves. So Rashi brings two possibilities why they're called hadesias. One is that it's named after the place they come from, and the other possibility is that they're named after Hurdus because he was the first to domesticate them. Whatever the case, these are doves. Now, unlike, for example, we learned in the first perek of Ar Masechta, you have doves or pigeons that are semi-wild. You build birdhouses for them out in the fields, and they go to those birdhouses, but basically they fly around and forage for their own food, as opposed to Yone Hadesias are completely domesticated and they live in houses. So they might be like homing pigeons or something. Whatever the case. So if a person traps those on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, potter. So even though you need a net to trap them, because even though they're small, even though they're smallish and they do run around, nevertheless, the fact that they're domesticated and they're in your chotzer means that you're potter for trapping them. So it's not a question of whether you need a net or not. Omer Rav Bar Rav Huna. So the Omer Shmuel. The difference is halolu boin lekluvin la'era, v'halolu ain boin lekluvin la'era. The difference is that They have little nests or cages where they go into at night. The Abzin Vatana Golan, at night, in the evening, they may run around the chotzer throughout the day, but in the evening they go back they instinctively into the little cage or enclosure or whatever that you have for them, into the little birdhouse that you have built for them in your chotzer. And then once they're in there, then you can easily grab them from there. So therefore they're already considered nitzad v'omid even if they're outside that. As opposed to when you have birds in a beaver in, they don't necessarily return to their little cubicle in the evening. So now if they're in a beaver in and the beaver in is large enough that you would need a net to catch them, then that's considered seda. The question is, what about though the wild or semi-wild kind of doves that we were talking about before, the ones that nest in birdhouses that you build for them, or the ones that nest in people's attics? They do come back to that place. They come back to the birdhouse or the attic in the evening. Vitanya, yet we learn in a braisa, if a person traps these doves that nest in birdhouses or in attics, or birds that nest in jugs that are in mansions. So Rashi explains that you have when people build mansions, sometimes they put on the top or around the top on the roof line of the mansion, they put jugs where the idea is that eventually wild birds will find them a hospitable place to make a nest, and therefore they'll make a nest inside the jug. So chayev, if a person traps any of those birds, he's chayev. So we see it's not a matter of whether they return to their nesting place in the evening, because these birds do that, and you still see their chayev. On the other hand, again, we're saying that if you trap that if you catch on Shabbos or on Yom Tov geese or chickens or domesticated doves, then you're potter. So what's the difference? So how exactly do we make the distinction? It can't be whether we need a net or not, because we need a net for all of them. It can't be whether they return to their nest in the evening, because we see that some of the ones that do, you're potter, and some of the ones you hire. So where do we draw the line? Elo Omer Rabbi Bar Avuna Omer Shmuel Halalu Boyin LeKluvin LaErev UMezanoisin Alecha. It's not just that the geese and the chickens and the Yonei Hadassias come back to their cubicle or their nest or whatever in the evening. It's also UMezanoisin Alecha. They depend on you for their food. They can't find their own food independently. So therefore, and you have to provide it for them. So therefore you're allowed to trap them. Therefore, they're considered like domesticated animals. They're already considered mezuman. They're already considered pre-prepared before Yom Tov. It's true that the semi-wild birds, they do come back to their kluv in the evening, but the aim is a nice and alacha, but they don't depend on you for food. They go forage for their own food. So that would be the distinction. So Tosfos explains that based on what they said at the beginning of the perek, that where you're allowed to trap them, you're allowed to give them food. Then therefore we see that these two things go together. Because you're allowed to trap them, because they're considered like domesticated animals, because they depend on you, therefore you're allowed to give them food. Also, Tosfos mentions that when we say over here that on the other hand, the ones that you're not allowed to trap would actually be also minat Torah. We're not just saying we're talking about dirabanan, then you wouldn't make a gzera l'gzera. So it has to be the ones that you're not allowed to trap are actually also daraisa at the trap, and therefore dirabanan, we add also that you shouldn't give them food. So that's one answer. Rav Mori gives a different answer. Hani avidi l'rabuye, v'hani loy avidi l'rabuye. The difference is that the semi wild birds they easily l'rabuye means to evade. They easily slip away from your grasp and run away. They, like we said before, but the tzipor dror, that these kinds of birds are similar. When you try to trap them, they're not going to stand for it. They're going to run away. As opposed to the geese and the chickens don't. He wants to say, what do you mean? Kulunami avidu l'rabuye. What do you mean? All birds do that. Even geese and chickens are going to try to run away from you when you try to grab them. The answer is l'kluvan kamrin and avidu l'rabuye. What we mean is, even within their kluv, even within their cubicle, so the yonei shovach, etc., even you follow them, you manage to get them to their kluv, still they're not going to allow you to grab them from there so easily. They're still going to try to slip out of your grasp. As opposed to the geese and the chickens, yes, while they're running around in the chotzer, they might try to run away from you, but eventually you get them to their kluv, you get them to their little cubicle, and then once they're in there, then they're docile, and they'll easily allow you to take them. So that's Rav Mori's explanation of why it is that you're allowed to catch them on Yom Tov. They're already considered trapped, as opposed to the Yonah, Shovach, and so forth that you can't. Okay, so that's the bottom line then. So to summarize what we've just said then, So fish in general are not considered nitzad v'omid at all. They're not in a small enough area where you can easily grab them. And you're not allowed to trap them on Yom Tov. Rashi learns you're not allowed to feed them because ein mezanoisin alacha. Tosfos says it's a gzeira because you might come to trap them. On the other hand, with wild animals and birds, it depends on the size of the beaver, it depends on the type of the bird, or it depends on the type of bird, whether it's the kind that's prone to try to evade you or not. And ultimately, we said it does also depend on the question of mezonos and alecha, and whether they have a defined place where they go to in the evening. If yes, then they're considered already trapped. If not, then not. The Mishnah continues. Mitzodis chaya ba'ofer dogim. If you have traps for wild animals or birds or fish, sha'asan me'erev Yom Tov. If you put up the traps before Yom Tov, lo yitol mehem, and now you come on Yom Tov and you find a creature trapped in it. Lo yitzo mehen miyamdiv. You're not allowed to take from them on yamdiv. Elim ken yadesh. You need sodom erev yamdiv unless you know that they were trapped already on erev yamdiv. Otherwise, they were muktzah at the beginning of yamdiv because you didn't know this particular animal or bird or whatever was going to get trapped. So therefore, you didn't have in mind for it. And like we learned in the first parak, you need hachona. You need to specifically say that you're going to take this one before yamdiv. Now it happened once that a goy brought fish to Ram Gamliel on Yavdiv, but Omer and Ram Gamliel said, Mutarin Hain, really this fish should be mutter. And the Gemara is going to ask, what do you mean it should be mutter? We just said, if you don't know whether it was trapped on Erev Yavdiv, it's also, how do we know that these fish that he's bringing were trapped out of Yavdiv? So we'll see about that in the Gemara. However, Ram Gamliel says, I don't want to take the fish from him because Rashi says, I hate him. This was an enemy of Ram Gamliel, and Ram Gamliel didn't want to accept the fish from him. An obvious question is, if he's an enemy of Ram Gamliel, why is he bringing him fish? There was actually an interesting essay that I read recently that was quoted on the Sforim blog, where he claimed that this guy who brought this fish to Ram Gamliel was actually one of the early Christians. For them, they used to use a fish as their symbol. Even nowadays, you sometimes see on cars, you see a bumper sticker and a fish-shaped bumper sticker that they use as a symbol of their religion. So what it could be is this was actually on one of the Goyish Chagas, and it happened to be Lahavdil, a Jewish Yom Tov as well, and the Goy is bringing Ram Gamliel fish to represent his religion, and therefore Ram Gamliel says, yes, it would be mutter from the point of view of Yom Tov, but I hate him, I understand he's bringing it as a symbol of his religion, and therefore I don't want it. So maybe, maybe not. It's an interesting chat. Anyway, the Gemara asks, Maisa Lister, are you telling me a Maisa that contradicts what you're just saying? You just said that if you don't know the fish was trapped on Erev Yom Tov, then you're not allowed to eat it on Yom Tov. And here Ram Gamliel is saying that I am willing to accept, I would have been willing to accept this fish from the goy if not for the fact that I hate him. So the Gemara says, Chasuri Mechsera, the Mishnah is missing words, but Hochi Katani, what it means to say is as follows. Sofik Muchon Osir, when you have a Sofik, whether it was prepared before Yom Tov, then it would be Osir. So not only when we said in the Mishnah that if you don't know that it was trapped before Yom Tov, means in other words that if you don't know whether it was trapped, in whether it was caught in the trap before Yom Tov or not, then it would be Osir to take it on Yom Tov. Ram Gamliel matter, whereas Ram Gamliel holds that kind of suffix is mutter. So it happened once that this goy brought fish to Ram Gamliel, and he said, according to his own shita, that this should be mutter, because it's only a suffix whether it was caught today or yesterday. But I don't want to take it from him. So that would be the idea. In other words, we're talking Sofik Muchan. So the Tanakama of the Mishnah, which the Gemara is going to bring soon, is according to Rabbi Yeshua, says that it's Osir, and Ram Gamliel says that it's Mutter. The reason for it to be Osir, if the whole thing is only a Gzeira Drabanan, why are we being Machmir on a Sofik? So one reason is we've talked about before, because the davar sheyesh lematirin, after Yom Tov, it's going to be completely mutter. So therefore, why should you eat it now when it's a suffix, whether it's also a mutter? Wait till Yom Tov is over, and then you'll be able to eat it behetet. Okay, so who is the halacha like? Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, ain halacha k Ram Gamliel. The halacha is not like Ram Gamliel. The halacha is rather like the Tanakama, like the implication of what the Tanakama says, that even suffix is also. The Ikka de Masnilaha, there were those who learned Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel's statement in connection with the following Bryce, said the Tanya, Sofik Muchon, where there the Bryce clearly spells out that in a case of Sofik, whether it was designated before Yom Tov, Ram Gamliel Mativ Rav Yeshua Oyser, and on that, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Allahu Ka Rav Yeshua. The difference is, Rashi explains, if Rav Yehuda's statement is referring to our Mishnah, after all, our Mishnah did not explicitly say that Sofik Muchan is Osir, so we can't say on that the Halacha is like the Tanakama, because what do you mean the Halacha is like? And we didn't say that the Tanakama was saying anything different. So therefore, we have to say the Halacha is not like Rav Gamliel, who's mentioned in the Mishnah. When we come to the Braisa, where it clearly says Sofik Muchan Osir, Rav Gamliel Matir, then we can say more clearly the Halacha is like, that the Halacha is like Rav Yeshua. The Ikka de Masnilaha. Now there's a third version of what this statement referred to. We had one version that it was originally said in reference to our Mishnah, a second one that it was said in reference to the Braisa about Sofik Mufan, and a third version, the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Shechten Minanagorin Biyamtiv. you would be allowed to shecht, you would be allowed to shecht wild animals that were taken from a bivrin on Yom Tov. Rashi explains that nagorin is another word for a bivrin, and we said before that a small bivrin, you're allowed to take animals from it. And the reason why it's called Nagorim over here is because you have over there Nigre Mayim, you have over there streams of water, artificial canals that you dig in the Bivrim in order for the animals to be able to drink. So the word for those is Nagrim or Nigrim, which means places where water flows. So therefore, that's another word for Bivrim. In fact, Rabbi Hanan also has the Girsa of Bivrim. So apparently, instead of the word Nagrim, he had the word Bivrim. A nun could be mixed up for a bays and in a manuscript and a gimel also for a bays. So you could have bivrin instead of nagrin. Anyway, so Bryce says you're allowed to shecht wild animals that were in a bivrin or in a nagrin, which is another word for a bivrin, on Yom Tov. Ava loymen arashosis amina machmeres, but you're not allowed to shecht wild animals that you found in a net or in a trap. So if you put out a net or a trap before Yom Tov and you come and find a chaya in it, you're not allowed to take that animal and shecht it on Yom Tov, because again, it's a suffix whether it was trapped on Yom Tov or before it. Rabbi Shimon Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Elazar says it depends. Bo u'matzim makukolin me'erev Yom Tov. If you already came on Erev Yom Tov and found one end of the trap already already messed up, then biyaduashem erev Yom Tov mitzoidu. Then so he may not. So Rashi describes these are very very long nets. They might extend a mil or a half a mil, so they might extend a couple of thousand feet. So now what happens is, so you might not go all the way to the other end to find the animal there. What might happen, Rav Shimon Elazar is saying, you go and check one end of the trap. Now, if an animal gets trapped in one end of it, it's trying to thrash around and get itself loose. So therefore, the result is that even the other end ends up getting messed up. When you come to the other end, you find that where it's stuck into the ground or wherever, or attached to a tree or whatever it was, you find is broken off or shaken out of place or whatever. So then that means, in effect, there must be a chaya trapped at the other end. So therefore, be a Jewish man of Yom Tov Mitzaydu Umotarin. Therefore, Rav Shimon Elazar says that shows that already that the animal was already trapped out of Yom Tov. Therefore, it should be mutter. Because why else would the one end of the trap that you check be pulled out of the ground or the tree or otherwise showing that it was disturbed? Bo Motzen Mekukolin be Yom Tov. On the other hand, if he comes only on Yom Tov and finds that it was disturbed, then we know that it was trapped on Yom Tov Asurin, and it would be Osir. Now the Gemara asks Hagufa Kasha. Before we get back to the question of Suffolk, let's figure out what Reb Shimon Elazar is saying. He's describing two cases. One where you come and find one end of the trap messed up on Erev Yom Tov. The other where you come and find it messed up on Yom Tov. So, Hagufa Kasha. So you seem to have a contradiction within the Braisa itself. Amrit bo matzim kolin be'erev Yom Tov, be'adurshim be'erev Yom Tov nitzoidu. You're saying if you came on Erev Yom Tov and found it already disturbed, then you know that the animal was trapped Erev Yom Tov. Time of the bo matzim kolin, implying only because you came on Erev Yom Tov and actually found it already disturbed, hos feka asurin, implying if you hadn't come on Erev Yom Tov, so you don't know what the status of the trap was on Erev Yom Tov, then it would be also Ema Sefer. But then the next part of the Braisa continues, Bo Motzim Mekukolin B'Yom Tov, that if you came on Yom Tov itself and found them disturbed, the Adurash B'Yom Tov Nitzodu, then you know that the animal was trapped on Yom Tov, and therefore it would be also Taima De Bo Motzim Mekukolin, implying only because you came on Yom Tov. And it sounds like you came before Yom Tov and the trap was still intact. And then you only came on Yom Tov and for the first time you found that the trap was not intact. Hosfeka me'erev Yom Tov nitzodu umotarin, implying if you're not sure, if you first came the first time on Yom Tov and you don't know now when that took place, you found it before Kolin, you don't know whether it was on Yom Tov or before Yom Tov, then it sounds like it would be mutter. So what is Reb Shimon Elazar saying? And the answer is Hochi Kamar. What he means is as follows. If he comes and finds the trap, or if he comes already on Erev Yom Tov and finds the trap already disturbed, fine. That means that the animal was already trapped Erev Yom Tov. ha-sveika, but if there's any kind of suffix, meaning that if he came only on Yom Tov for the first time and found the trap disturbed, and now we don't know did it happen before Yom Tov or did it happen on Yom Tov, nase, it's considered commission, it's so to be Yom Tov, as though they were trapped on Yom Tov of Asurin, and then they would be also because of the suffix. So it would be also, it's not two different scenarios, it's one scenario. If he comes out of Yom Tov and finds it already disturbed, then you know that it was already disturbed out of Yom Tov, that the animal was trapped out of Yom Tov. Now, by the way, we're showing him explain. The Chachamim still are going to disagree with Rav Shimon Elazar. They're going to say that's not a solid proof. You might have had, let's say, an animal did get trapped in it and then managed to free itself, and now you have another animal trapped in there. You might have that a different animal stepped in on this end of the trap and didn't get trapped, and therefore you find it disturbed. There's no solid proof from that, say the Chachamim, that because one end of the trap is disturbed, that necessarily the animal that you find at the other end was necessarily trapped before Yom Tov. But anyway, Rav Shimon Elazar is saying you can rely on that. So if you find the trap already on Erev Yom Tov disturbed, then Rav Shimon Elazar is going to allow the animal that you find at the other end of it, even though you find the animal itself only on Yom Tov, because you already found the one end of the trap disturbed on Erev Yom Tov. But if there's a suffix, if you didn't come check it at all on Erev Yom Tov, and then the first time you came and checked it and found it messed up, the first time you came and found it disturbed was on Yom Tov, then you have a suffix, therefore it would be also. So in effect, he's saying the same as what we said in the Braisa. In effect, he's saying the same thing as implicitly the Tanakhama of our Mishnah is saying, and that Rabbi Yeshua is saying in the first Braisa that we brought in the Gemara, that Sofik Mochan is also. And the Gemara says, Omer of Yehuda, Omer Shmuel, Halacha, Krib Shemin Elazar, the Halacha is like that, that Sofik Mochan is also, and not like Rabbi Gamliel, not like Rabbi Gamliel, who says that it would be Mutter. However, so now we're not going to hold like the Chachamim against Rav Shimon Elazar and saying that even you found the trap disturbed on Erev Yom Tov, and later on Yom Tov you go find the animal in the trap. We might say that maybe it's a different animal or something. Rav Shimon Elazar is not choshish for that, and we're saying the halacha is we don't have to be choshish for that. So you're allowed to take the animal, but if on Erev Yom Tov you still found the trap intact, and only on Yom Tov was the first time you found the trap messed up, then it would be also. And that's the halacha. Okay. Continuing in the Mishnah, we said, V'omra mutarim heim. We said when this guy brought the fish to Rav Gamliel, he said, really, the fish would be mutter, but I don't want to take it for him. Now, we have to figure out mutter as far as what? Mutarim l'mai. What do we mean, mutter as far as what? Now, when we say mutter, we could mean mutter as in you're allowed to eat them, or we could say it means mutter as in they're not mukta, you're allowed to move them, but you're not allowed to eat them. So, Rav Omer Mutarim L'Kabel. So, Rav says, really, it would be mutter to accept the gift from the goy and to handle it. It wouldn't be considered mukta, because even if we're saying Sofik Mochan is Osir, Rav takes the view, we're not going to be machmir so much on it to say that it should be mukta. We're just going to say, even Rav Gamliel would agree, according to Rav's explanation, that Sofik Mochan is also to eat. We're just saying that he would say that Sofik Mochan you're allowed to handle. It's not considered mukta. The Levi Omer Mutarim Ba'Achila, Levi says that Rav Gamliel would say that the fish is even mutter to eat. Rashi, by the way, points out it's not that Rav and Levi hold la halacha like Rav Gamliel. We just said that the halacha is not like Rav Gamliel. But they're coming to explain what Rav Gamliel is saying. Does he agree with the Chachamim that you can't eat the fish? All he's arguing is, can you handle it or not? Where the Chachamim would say it's completely mukta, and he's saying that not, or would he even allow you to eat it? So the Gemara says, Omer Rav. So Rav says in this connection, here's a powerful lesson. A person should never hold himself back for even a short time from going to the Beis Medrash. Because when you go to the Beis Medrash, you may find out something that you didn't know before. Because you should know, I and Levi were both Talmidim of Rebbe. We were both Talmidim in front of him. Now, when he was telling over this discussion, this din, in the evening, one evening, he explained that Rav Gamliel would say it's Mutarim Ba'Achila. But the next morning, he said, Alma Mutarim Lakabo. He said, actually, no, it only means that that even Rav Gamliel is saying you're not allowed to eat them, you're just allowed to move them, you're allowed to handle them. So Rav says, I know the Havoi Be Medrasha. I was in the Bes Medrash in the morning, Hadribi, so therefore I changed my mind. Rebbe had changed his mind about what the Mishnah means, and therefore Rav, being his Talmud, also accepted Rebbe's new explanation. Levi, do I have a Bei Medrash, Alei Hodebe? Whereas Levi was not in the Bes Medrash in the morning, so he didn't change his mind. Now, so what does that mean? Does Levi not believe that Rebbe changed his mind? No, but obviously Levi believes it, but Levi could also figure, it doesn't matter. If I had been there in the Bes Medrash that morning, I would have argued the point with Rebbe, and I would have convinced Rebbe that the original position is correct, and in fact, Mutarim Ba'Achila, and therefore Levi is still entitled to hold to his Shitta. But Rav says, on the other hand, maybe not. Levi, if you had been there, it's not just Rebbe didn't just say, you know what, I changed my mind, it means Mutarim Lakabel. Obviously, it means Rebbe explained very clearly why he's changing his mind. So Rav is saying, Levi, if you had been there, you're saying you might have convinced Rebbe the contrary. Fine, but on the other hand, Rebbe might have convinced you to the contrary. So it's a pity you weren't in the Bes Medrash that morning. You missed that whole point. Okay, fine. So the Gemara says, Mason. I have a contradiction on Levi's understanding Mutarim Ba'Achila. A Braisa says, Nachri Shehevi Durin Lisrael, if a Guri brings a present for a Jew on Yom Tov, Afilu Dogen HaMufulamim, even if he's bringing him fresh fish, Mufulamim literally means moist. So the fish are still moist. In other words, they were obviously caught not that long ago. Or even if he brings fruit, which obviously was picked that day, and we're talking on Yom Tov, mutarin, then that fish or that fruit is mutter. So b'shleim l'manda omer mutarin l'kabel. If you say it means that you're allowed to accept the gift from the goy, but you have to wait to eat it till after Yom Tov Shapir. Okay, then we understand. They were obviously it's not suffic, it's vaday, but nevertheless, we're still going to allow you to handle it. Now we're going to ask soon why the Gemara is going to ask soon why that is. But in any case, at least we can understand that it means you're not allowed to eat them. So according to Rav it works. But if you're going to say like Levi that Rav Gamliel's Mutarin in our Mishnah means you're even allowed to eat them when they're Suffolk Mochan, well then why should they be Mutar over here? Are you allowed to eat fruit that was picked that day of Yom Tov? Obviously not. They're mukta. So how does he understand the Braisa? So the answer is, the Gemara says, new, and according to your own svara that you're asking the question, so you could ask the same question. Even if you say mutarin means you're allowed to handle them, so what? If they were picked on that day and they're obviously fresh, then they're still also to move at all. They're still mukta. So obviously, however you're going to understand the braisa, whether mutarin means to handle them or to eat them, you're still going to need to understand it. So ella the kavri da adimi. Rather, what we have to talk about is that the fish are still red. So Rashi explained the fish are not only still wet; they still have their reddish color by their cheeks, which is where you check whether the fish is still alive. So they're still actually alive, or at least they were alive as of a few minutes ago. They're red, but on the other hand, it's not the kind of red where they obviously were alive recently, and therefore there's reason to think that they were trapped, that they were caught now on Yom Tov, but rather they're still fresh. So the guy put it on ice when he first got it, and now therefore they still have their fresh color. Or the same thing, the fruit might mean, for example, that he buried them among vegetables to keep them fresh. So in other words, they were in fact picked or caught on Erev Yom Tov. So even though they resemble Bnei Yoimon, we're not concerned about Marisai. So we can understand it that way. So we're not talking about, in other words, that there is a suffix or a vadai, whether they were picked or caught today. We're talking about that they were picked or caught yesterday, but they were preserved in a way that you can show that they still look fresh. Rashi brings a second explanation of kavri da'adimi, means fish that's cut up. But Rashi says, I don't like that explanation because then what's the chiddush? Well, of course, if it's cut up, there's no reason to think particularly that it was picked, that it was caught today. Now, Tosfos explains differently. According to Rashi's explanation, if you know that they were trapped out of Yom Tov, then of course you're allowed to eat them. There's no chiddush in it. The whole point is, Tosfos says, it sounds like we're talking only according to Rav Gamliel, who holds Safek Muchan as Mutter. So Tosfos explains it exactly that way. We don't know for sure that it was picked or trapped on Yom Tov, on Erev Yom Tov. It might have, we find the fish looks very fresh. It might have been caught Erev Yom Tov and preserved on ice or whatever. It might have been caught on Yom Tov, and that's why it looks so fresh. Nevertheless, Rav Gamliel is saying, like his shita, Safek Muchan is Mutter. And again, Rav will understand that he means Mutter to move, and Levi will understand that it means Mutter to eat. So why are we calling these fruits or these fish Bnei Yoman? Shein Kein Bnei Yoman, because they look like Bnei Yoman. They look very fresh. But nevertheless, according to Rashi, we know that they were picked or caught out of Yom Tov, and therefore they should be mutter according to everybody. And according to Tosfos, it's a suffix, and therefore they're going to be mutter according to Rav Gamliel. So the Gemara says, Amar Papa, Hilchasa, the bottom line halacha, Nachri Shehebi Dodin Lisrael B'Yom Tov, if a goy brings a present of fruit or fish or whatever to a Jew on Yom Tov, so it depends. Im Yesh Me'osa Min B'Mechover, if that species is something that exists attached to the ground, then they would be Asur because of Muchza. So in other words, we're talking about, let's say he brings fresh fruit where there's a possibility that it was picked that day. In the evening, even after Yom Tov is over, it's also for the amount of time, until the amount of time it would take to pick the fruit and to bring it over. Now, what about when there's a two-day Yom Tov? Let's talk about in a second. On the other hand, now if that species does not exist by mechuber, in other words, it's something that doesn't have to be picked or trapped, or it's something where you can tell that it's obviously not fresh, then if the goy brought it from someplace within the tchum, then it's mutter to eat it on Yom Tov, because now there's no malacha that was done with it at all. Chutz l'tchum osur, but if he brought it from outside the tchum, then it would be osur. Rashi says, I don't really understand why it should be osir. It's not mukta because v'hocha b'shvu Yisrael zemutter liYisrael acher. But I misread it. V'habah b'shvu Yisrael zemutter liYisrael acher. But if it was brought for one Jew, it's mutter for a different Jew. Now Rashi says, I don't understand. If it's a matter of mukta, then it should be also equally to all Jews. If it's a matter of because it was brought outside from outside the tchum and therefore an isur was done, also it should be also for another year. So Rashi says maybe because since Tchumin are Dirabbanan, maybe the Chachamim weren't going to be Machmir that much. And it's enough to answer it for the person for whom it was brought, and therefore, but not to answer it for other people. Rashi says another explanation, which is that if it's from outside the Tchum, the Yid might send the Goy to bring it from outside the Tchum. Whereas when it was brought for one year, then a different year is allowed to, because then he obviously didn't tell the guy to do it, so therefore that should be mutter. Okay, so now what happens when it comes to a 2-day Yom Tov? So if a guy brings something for a yid on the first day of a 2-day Yom Tov, when we say la erev asur mechdeshi yosu, what happens on the second day of Yom Tov? So Rashi says that. So Rashi says that like this. After all, we know that 2 days of Yom Tov, with the again not if it's 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, because those are kedusha achas, but if it's a regular 2-day Yom Tov, is always a suffix, whether the first day is Yom Tov or the second. Therefore, the logic is that therefore if he brings it on the first day of Yom Tov, you should be allowed to eat it on the second day of Yom Tov. You should be allowed. You shouldn't even need to wait. You wait b'chdeshi also into the second night of Yom Tov, and then it's going to be mutter. Rashi first says, I didn't have a chance to ask my Rebbe about it since people were knowing such a heter. It was obviously a double pasher to me. Then on the other hand, Rashi continues, after my Rebbe, Rabbi Yaakov, passed away, then he says, I heard that another one of my Rebbeim, Rabbeinu Yitzchok Halevi, says that actually it would be also both days of Yom Tov. And I discussed it with him, and Rashi says, I discussed it with him, and I still maintain that it should be mutter on the second day, even though Rabbi Yitzchok Halevi said that not. And Rashi goes on to say that actually I found a tshuva of Rabbeinu Gershom or a Goyle that agrees with me, and I also got a letter that there was a Rabbeinu Kloinimus came from Rome who was Baki B'chol HaShas, and he also held that it's also only the first day. Tosfos discusses that at some length of a year. So now what it is like this. There's two different svaras. One svara is, again, that it should be, like Rashi is saying, that you should be allowed on the second day of Yom Tov, because after all, yes, you can't do the malacha, you are benefiting from the fact that the goy did the malacha on Yom Tov, but after all, the 2 days, one, it's a suffix. One is Yom Tov, one is not. Therefore, mamanaf shechet should be mutter. Now, so that's one way of looking at it. It doesn't matter the fact that you have to wait in order not to have hana from the malacha of Yom Tov, because then it should be mutter, then it should be also on the second day as well, but rather because the fact is the goy did a malacha on Yom Tov. The other way of looking at it, on the other hand, now Tosfos discusses over here, and so do a number of other Rishonim, that the reason why we have to wait b'chdeshi also is because if you allow him to use it right away Matzah Yom Tov, then he's likely to tell the goy to bring it to him on Yom Tov so that he can eat it on Matzah Yom Tov, which is similar to the second svara that Rashi had said as far as Mechut Patchum and Mesech Atchum, why it should be also. So therefore, now the problem is, Amir L'Nochri is something that people treat very casually. So therefore, according to the second logic, according to Tosfos' logic, and apparently that would also be the explanation of Rabbi Yitzchak HaLevi, Rashi's Rebbe, is why we would say that it's also both days. So now on the one hand, there comes out a chumrah in that opinion, that you'd have to wait both days of Yom Tov. On the other hand, there comes out a kula from it, that only the one who the goy brought it for would have to wait b'chdeshi asu. Anybody else would be able to eat it the moment Yom Tov is over. Because if the whole point is, again, like Rashi had said, like Rashi himself says, since the whole reason for any gzera like this is only so you don't tell the goy to do the malacha for you, so therefore it's enough if we're asking it to you. So you yourself that it was brought for, according to that, would have to wait until the end of the second day of Yom Tov, but everybody else would be able to eat it the moment the second day of Yom Tov is over. The Alter Rebbe brings, has a very, very long discussion about it in Hilchos Yom Tov. It's probably one of the longest tzifim in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch. And he says that the minig in these countries is like the second svara, so we have to wait till the end of the second day to eat this food that the goy brought, and we're actually machmir to a certain extent, like the first svara as well, like Rashi's svara, that the issue, that waiting b'chdeshi also applies not only to the yid that it was brought for, but to anybody else as well. And therefore we end up being machmir not to even move it on Yom Tov because it's mukta, because nobody can eat it. On the other hand, the Alter Rebbe goes on to say that the Taz is mako on this, and therefore based on the Taz, if you don't have this particular thing, let's say a goy brought a certain kind of fruit which you want to be able to serve, you want to be able to serve it, let's say the covered Shabbos, and you don't have it, so then you can be mako. So then when you have a 2 day Yom Tov going into Shabbos, so then you can be mako for Shabbos and say that you can wait on Matzah Yom Tov Rishon B'chdeshi Asu and cook it on the second day of Yom Tov and use it for Shabbos. And again, he goes on with various other cases involving Orchim, whatever, where you're able to be Mekel. But generally speaking, we would say that not. Generally speaking, the Goy brings something. It's also both days of Yom Tov and after Yom Tov B'chdeshi Asu, not just for you, but for everybody else.
Yeah, Shikoyach. Yeah. Company, yet company.